Hey, healthcare friends, do you dread doing your notes every day? Do you feel like you can never get ahead of charting? If you're shaking your head yes, keep listening. Freed AI is a medical scribe on a mission to free clinicians everywhere. Freed AI listens, transcribes, and writes medical documentation for you, written in your style and ready the moment the visit is over. All you have to do is give it to your patient. Just imagine leaving the office at the same time as your last patient. Freed is HIPAA compliant, secure, and takes less than 30 seconds to learn. Artificial intelligence cannot replace you, but it can do the administrative work that no human should be subjected to. Get back to doing what you love, helping your patients, and let Freed AI do the rest. Well, I've got another special episode for you guys today on drug interactions. More specifically, I'm going to take a look at my top 10 anticoagulant drug interactions. So definitely going to be touching on pixaban, warfarin, maybe even a little bit of Lovenox and heparin. So plenty of drug interactions here that you should know. Obviously, it's not an all-inclusive list, but it's some of the most common things I've come across in practice. As well as maybe some of the most significant things that you should be paying attention to with regard to anticoagulants. So without further ado, here we go. Number one, apixaban, rivaroxaban. These two agents have been certainly growing in popularity. And it is recommended to avoid strong inducers of CYP3A4 and P-glycoprotein. Okay, so CYP3A4 is an enzyme that breaks this drug down. P-glycoprotein is a transporter that essentially helps get rid of drug, reduce concentrations. And by inducing the action of these two things, what you end up doing is lowering concentrations of apixaban and rivaroxaban, which ultimately increases the risk for blood clots, which is generally what we're trying to either treat or reduce with the use of anticoagulants. So what are some of these medications? Carbamazepine, used in bipolar disorder, seizure disorder, phenytoin, used for seizure disorder, rifampin, and St. John's wort, an over-the-counter supplement that patients sometimes take. So really, really important to remember this one. It is contraindicated to use these together. So if you ever see prescriptions for some of those medications in combination with an anticoagulant, we definitely got to address it and ask the questions to potentially get rid of those medications being used together. Of course, number two I'm going to put on the list, it should be fairly obvious one for you. Avoid other anticoagulants in combination with other anticoagulants. So, you know, heparin, warfarin, rivaroxaban, apixaban. You know, the one exception might be some converting between. But typically for most of them now, warfarin does have a slower onset, so there may be some overlap there in some situations. But most of them now typically have a quicker onset of action. So once you get to a certain INR, you know, less than 3, less than 2, depending upon the agent, then we can generally go ahead and just start that newer anticoagulant in a patient taking warfarin, for example, there. So again, long-term use of anticoagulants together, definitely not recommended. Anticoagulants and antiplatelets. This is often a hot button issue. It is not a true contraindication to take baby aspirin with apixaban or warfarin or whatever medication, but we do need to continually assess that risk. The more anticoagulant, antiplatelet medications you got on board, the higher the bleed risk. But you may have somebody that's using baby aspirin for secondary prevention of ASCVD. So maybe they've, you know, had multiple heart attacks in the past and that aspirin is beneficial. But we've definitely got to keep a close eye on that, because as you add more and more of those agents, that bleed risk certainly goes up. So monitoring hemoglobin, CBC, platelets, hematocrit, things like that, definitely going to be important in that situation. Number four, we've got NSAIDs. So using NSAIDs with anticoagulants, it's not a true contraindication in most situations, but we better have a very, very good reason why we're going to even try to consider using an NSAID like ibuprofen or naproxen or diclofenac. We better have a very, very good reason where we've tried multiple other pain medications, that type of thing, because NSAIDs can have kind of a twofold risk in bleed opportunities. We've got that antiplatelet effect from NSAIDs, but we've also got kind of that direct insult to the gut and increasing that GI bleed risk as well. In the rare case, I have had a couple providers that have wanted to do a low-dose NSAID with an anticoagulant. Again, not something I would encourage at all if you can avoid it at all. But in that situation where you've got you know, a provider or whatever the case may be that wants to do an NSAID with an anticoagulant, we're probably at a minimum going to do some GI protection, so using a PPI, for example, there. All right, number five, we've got CYP3A4 inhibitors with apixaban, rivaroxaban. So we've got stronger CYP3A4 inhibitors, such as azole antifungals like itraconazole, ketoconazole. Numerous HIV medications have this type of action as well. Product labeling recommends reducing the dose by 50%. So I think that's definitely a strong consideration, given you've got some guidance there from the manufacturer. If, you know, providers are inclined not to do that, we definitely got to have close monitoring on this at all costs, for sure. With that said, you know, when you see some of these medications prescribed that interact, so let's say NSAIDs, let's say, you know, azole antifungals, and they're increasing that bleed risk and interacting, it's a good opportunity to take a peek and say, hey, can we do anything different? You know, can we use you know, a short-term opioid instead of an NSAID, or can we use a different antifungal agent that maybe interacts less with apixaban, for example? So really, really important to look at your options and your alternatives. But again, considering a dose reduction is a strong consideration here as well. So we've got those. I alluded to some of the strong inhibitors of CYP3A4. There's also some moderate inhibitors to CYP3A4. Diltiazem and probably grapefruit juice are probably the things that I've seen come up most commonly in practice. So both of these can inhibit CYP3A4, potentially increase concentrations of the drug, like apixaban, also rivaroxaban as well, and increase concentration. So again, with that increased concentration, bleed risk is going to go higher and higher and higher. So again, important to monitor, important to look for alternatives. Again, diltiazem can be used somewhat frequently because if we're using, let's say, apixaban, for example, if we're using that as an anticoagulant in a patient with atrial fibrillation, well, diltiazem's got an indication to potentially be used for atrial fibrillation. So there is some opportunity there to see those two used together. And then, of course, we've got to figure out how to navigate that drug interaction if those are the only choices that we have there. All right, number six, let's get on to warfarin. So warfarin's got tons of drug interactions. The two that I wanted to, I've got three in the list here, but probably the two most important ones are number six in relation to CYP2C9. So we've got a couple of antibiotics specifically that inhibit CYP2C9. So sulfamethoxazole trimethoprim and metronidazole branaflagyl there. So by inhibiting CYP2C9, that's one of the major pathways that the strong enantiomer, basically a different kind of formulation of warfarin, if you will, if you're not an expert at biochemistry. But it can increase concentrations of the S enantiomer, and ultimately raise INR and increase bleed risk. I've seen INRs go from, you know, goal range of 2 to 3 upwards of double digits due to this drug interactions, upwards of 10 and above. So very, very significant interaction can lead to significant increases in the risk for bleeding. Number 7 on the list is vitamin K supplements. So occasionally patients will pick up, you know, multivitamin combinations, just vitamin K supplements in general, thinking they're, you know, benefiting their health, that type of thing, just as a general supplement. With vitamin K, the more intake, vitamin K intake that a patient has, the lower the effectiveness of warfarin. So again, more vitamin K, that INR is going to drop. So as far as diet changes goes, you know, vitamin K is in green leafy vegetables and plenty of other foods as well. I'm not going to go through the entire list here, but diet changes can affect warfarin. Okay, so if you increase vitamin K, you're going to get lower INRs. On the flip side, if you've got consistently high intake of vitamin K and then you take it away and they're still on warfarin, then we can get INRs to go up. So very, very important to recognize that interplay of vitamin K with the use of warfarin. One unique one I wanted to mention, number 8 here, is enoxaparin and heparin. So these type of products, there is some evidence to say that they can impact potassium. And more specifically, they can cause some hyperkalemia and raise potassium levels. So naturally, we can go back and think about other drugs that raise potassium levels, ACE inhibitors. Obviously, if you got somebody taking potassium supplements, ARBs, spironolactone, these are all drugs that can raise potassium levels. And if we add on enoxaparin or heparin, there is the potential that this spikes up further. So generally, it's not going to be a contraindication or anything, but we're definitely going to want to monitor those potassium levels for sure in a patient who's looking to get or take maybe more, you know, chronic longer-term enoxaparin or heparin. Dabigatran, not an incredibly used anticoagulant anymore. It can cause some bleed risk, particularly in older age, and there are some other things with that. It's a twice-daily drug as well. So that's a little bit of a downside. But anyway, if you do see a patient on this medication, antacids are theorized to reduce concentrations of this medication and ultimately reduce the effectiveness. So some of those antacid-type medications, you know, calcium carbonate, magnesium-based products, sodium bicarbonate, again, they can all reduce concentrations. And the thought is, that dabigatran requires a somewhat acidic environment for solubility, and obviously that can affect absorption as well. And with that interplay and kind of reducing the acidity of the stomach with things like calcium carbonate, that can ultimately reduce concentrations of dabigatran and reduce the overall effectiveness. All right, and finishing up on number 10, and this would be a good one for board exams as well. Don't forget to always check out meded101.com/store for good board exam prep material like BCPS and ambulatory care and so on and so forth. But anyway, this drug interaction, amiodarone and warfarin, can cause INRs to go up and warfarin concentrations to go up. So again, it's likely mediated through some CYP enzymes. 2C9 maybe has some interplay here with that interaction. Again, can raise warfarin concentrations. And similarly, as we pull away some of these medications, so let's say you've got a patient on long-term amiodarone and warfarin and their INRs are just fine. So if for whatever reason we discontinue that amiodarone, well, as that drug concentration falls, we could anticipate that the INR might fall as well. So it's going to do the opposite when we take away that drug. So definitely an important thing to remember with some of these drug interactions for sure. All right. Well, I think that's going to wrap up the podcast for today. If you enjoyed this episode, please do me a huge favor. Leave a rating or review on iTunes or wherever you're listening. Share us with email, listservs, social media. I greatly appreciate all the support in helping to spread the message on pharmacology and, of course, drug interactions here today. If you want to reach out to me, mededucation101 at gmail.com. Please support meded101.com/store. Great list of resources there that have helped thousands of pharmacists and pharmacy students pass board exams. So go check that out. All those links at meded101.com/store. With that, I'm going to sign off for today. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you have a great rest of your day.